Do summer projects your way with Memorial Day savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can make the most of summer grilling and dig into gardening. Plus, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like power tools and storage to tackle any last-minute garage project. Summer your way with Memorial Day savings from The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select and stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Dickie V. loves him some Peter King. If you love the NFL, you must read Peter King's various opinions on many topics involving situations of major interest to fans of the National Football League. When he talks pro football, I am listening, baby! Dickie V. Wow. And he got the right Peter King in the tag. How many times do people mean to tag you on Twitter and they get Peter King the congressman?
Or Peter King who works for CBS Radio or CBS News, yeah. Yeah, that was nice. I mean, I went down to visit him in August, and, you know, he said to me, like, he's, for people who you know, don't have a chance to hang out with Dick Vitale, it's not like I hang out with Dick Vitale, but I went to see him when I was on my training camp trip. He lives an hour outside of Tampa in Sarasota. And so I went down there and talked to him, and at one point he turns to me and he said, Peter, should I really be excited? Should I dare to dream? Are the Bucks really going to win it? Can they win it? And he's 9. I mean, you know, he's just fun to hang around with, and he loves the Bucks. And like, I've always thought that he would look at people like Mike Krzyzewski and Dean Smith as like, you know, the pinnacle of sports. Well, there's a pinnacle above the pinnacle, and it's occupied by Tom Brady. I mean, you know, he loves him some Tom Brady, and he loved him back in August. I can't imagine how he feels about him now.
Two quick Dick Vitale observations. First, I saw either a photo or a video of your visit with Dick Vitale. As of August, he had not yet mastered the art of putting the mask over the nose, not under the nose.
Yeah.
And second, when my son was in grade school and I'd drive him to school every day, it was once a week he would be on with Mike and Mike, and we'd listen on the way in. And I would imitate Dickie V after he would do his spot or during his spot, and it made my son laugh. Back when they are the age where they think dad is funny. So I remember that because it's probably the last time I actually made him laugh. But thank you, Dickie V.
Yeah, those days are long gone.
A basis. Yes, they are. Giving me a basis for making my son laugh by talking like Dickie V when he would do stock up and stock down on Mike and Mike a long, long time ago. All right, let's get into this second hour of our Wednesday edition of PFT Live, a segment we haven't done in a while. Which doesn't belong and why? A nod to the Cardinal from the long-defunct Don Imus show, Bernard McGuirk, highly inappropriate content, especially judged by current standards. Even at the time, it was highly inappropriate to the point where I couldn't believe some of the stuff that he would say, but he'd do it with the accent, and which doesn't belong and why would always cap his segment. So let's get into it, which doesn't belong and why. Unhappy quarterbacks, which doesn't belong and why. Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson, Carson Wentz, which doesn't belong and why.
I'd say Russell Wilson, because those other two don't want to step foot in the buildings of their team ever again. Russell Wilson, I think, probably understands that he's not going anywhere. He just wants the landscape to be a little bit different in 2021 and beyond.
I'm going to go with the obvious low-hanging fruit here, Peter. I'm going to go with Carson Wentz, and I'm going to characterize Carson Wentz in a way that I vividly recall you characterizing certain players under certain circumstances while we were watching games together years ago in the NBC viewing room. Carson Wentz, you blow. You blow! So that's why he doesn't belong.
Was that pre-Tony Dungy?
No. Tony was in the room. Tony was in the room. I think what I said was
I'm
okay.
Sorry,
I think
Tony.
We've heard that. I don't think we get bleeped for that in London or elsewhere. Anyway, speaking of, and people
hello,
still
London.
Watching on Sky Sports, they get mad when I say sorry, London, and don't say sorry, Manchester, or sorry, Liverpool. It's the bit. That's the joke. We say sorry, London, as the catch-all when I say something that I shouldn't say. So sorry, everyone. All right. Deshaun Watson, the Broncos, according to ABC7 in Denver, will pursue Deshaun Watson if the Texans decide to trade him. Now, that was strangely worded because it implies they're not going to pursue him unless and until the Texans throw the door open and say we're going to trade him. Why not go ahead and start making offers even before they say they're going to trade him? Maybe they're just doing that for leverage. But, Peter, that would shake things up, I would say, if Deshaun Watson ended up with the Denver Broncos.
I mean, you have to ask yourself what, and again, look, what Denver has that Houston would want is not Drew Lock, although they might take him in that event. What Denver has is the 9th pick in the draft and a possible high pick next year as well. Now, who knows? If they get Deshaun Watson, the pick's going to go lower. But I try to look at this from a logical standpoint, Mike, and I try to say what teams are really good fits for Deshaun Watson. The best fit, far, far, far and away, is the New York Jets because of what they have in draft choices and the fact they have Sam Darnold, who might be your quarterback of the future. So that still is the best one, but there are going to be a lot of teams that are going to be like Denver. Well, if they're going to trade them, we're interested. Who wouldn't be interested? Yeah. You know, unless you have a franchise quarterback on your team, you're going to be interested in that. Even teams you think might not be interested. San Francisco is going to be interested. Minnesota is going to be interested. All of these teams, even that have decent quarterback situations, may say, hey, look, we're making a call on this. Why wouldn't we?
Another point, though, as it relates to the Broncos' potential interest, what they can offer the Texans is Drew Lock. And even though there's a different coach and a different GM, the two guys who run the team as a practical matter are still there from December of 2019 when Drew Lock and the Broncos came to town and kicked the crap out of a playoff team, Texans. And Lock was incredible that day and outdueled Deshaun Watson. So of all the transactions you could do where you bring a guy to town as Watson goes, if we get Drew Lock in this, there may be some appeal to it because they've seen Drew Lock at his absolute best. There's potential there if they would end up with him. Next topic, which doesn't belong and why. Free agent quarterbacks under the age of 30. Jameis Winston, Mitchell Trubisky, Jacoby Brissett, which doesn't belong and why.
Wow, that's a gem. I would say Jacoby Brissett. The only reason I would say Brissett, because I don't think that it's hopeless for him to ever be a good starting quarterback. I think the other two right now are valued more highly and viewed more highly by the rest of the league, especially those thinking that I will take a chance the second time around on Mitchell Trubisky with no pressure on him, just bringing him in and seeing what we got. Like, for instance, and again, I have no idea what's going to happen to Trubisky, But if the San Francisco 49ers next year were to start Jimmy Garoppolo, which probably is going to happen, not certainly, but probably, if they start Jimmy Garoppolo, don't you think that one of the things that John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan have to say to each other is, okay, look, we love, you know, our two backup quarterbacks. We love Mullen and Beathard, but can we do better? In my opinion, if I were them, I'd want to take a shot on getting, and plus, you know, we forget too that we don't know exactly how their quarterback room is going to look. You know, because obviously they look like a team that's going to be able to consider alternatives.
Hey, when you have a quarterback, a starting quarterback, a franchise quarterback that when he got his latest contract was the highest paid player in league history and he's missed 23 games over the last 3 years, you better have a good backup. And it better be better than Nick Mullins, who had some moments last yes. year that I'm surprised he wasn't cut then and there by Kyle Shanahan. So I'll say Jameis Winston just because I think he's got the biggest upside by far of the three. It's just a matter of being in the right spot and having him in a system where they can find a way to just iron out that just that recklessness that puts him in position. Because I still think that he tries to do more than he's capable of doing. He needs to know when to stop. He needs to always stay within his abilities. He gets into trouble when he goes beyond his natural abilities. And his natural abilities are great. Don't try to do too much and you don't have 30 interceptions, or at least half of those interceptions don't happen because you were trying to do too much when it happened. Free agent quarterbacks over 30, Cam Newton, Andy Dalton, and Ryan Fitzpatrick, which doesn't belong and why.
I would say Cam Newton because you know what Ryan Fitzpatrick is. You know what Andy Dalton is. You know that both of those guys are guys you'd really like to have on your team as either backups or sometimes starters. I just don't know what... I think Cam Newton might be really good again before he retires from football. But Mike, I just don't know what he is. I do not know what Cam Newton is after watching him for wide swaths of the 2020 season. There were times where his throwing mechanics looked off, where his arm didn't look the same, where he was inconsistent. And again, look, a lot of that is due to the fact that the New England Patriots have a horrible cadre of skill position players collectively. And that is Bill Belichick's fault. But those other two guys, I know exactly what they are. Cam Newton, I don't know what he is.
Well, and I'm going to say Fitzpatrick doesn't belong and why, because he is the one guy who, when you expect nothing from him, he plays like a Hall of Famer. When you begin to believe, well, maybe this guy's still got a chance to make it to the Hall of Fame, he's one of the worst quarterbacks you can ever see. The Fitzmagic to Fitztragic toggle switch, and it's like clockwork. As soon as you're all in, as soon as you're like, yes, it's finally here,
switch.
It goes the other way to Fitztragic, doesn't it? And then he gets benched, and then he comes back at some point, and it's magic again. So I can't figure that guy out. It's fun from a fan's perspective. It's got to be horribly frustrating from the fan of a team who is relying on him's perspective. All right, free agent pass rushers who were franchise tagged last year. Matthew Judon, Yannick Ngakoue, Bud Dupree, which doesn't belong and why?
I would say the one who doesn't belong is Matthew Judon because he's the only one of those three that I enter this offseason fully believing in. And again, I think that both of those other two guys, Bud Dupree was playing some of his best football ever before he got hurt this year in Pittsburgh. Yannick Ngakoue had a pretty quiet, that was a big trade at the time. Remember, the Ravens getting Ngakoue from Minnesota. And so I thought Ngakoue was going to have an impact run with the Ravens, and he really didn't. He was okay, but he wasn't a great player for them. So I would say the one I trust is Judon. The one who's different is Judon because I think in almost any defense right now, he can give you a 12-sack season in 2021?
I'll go with Dupree for the obvious and unfortunate reason. During his franchise tag year, he suffered a torn ACL. That is going to dramatically alter his earning potential this year. He's probably going to have to sign a one-year deal somewhere and hope that he can play well enough to earn a longer-term deal. If he gets a long-term deal, it's basically going to be a one-year deal that would be ripped up by his new team if they decide that he isn't all the way back. It's just a shame that he had that ACL tear before he got his financial reward. He was having a great, great season. He had a great season the year before that, prompting the Steelers to use that franchise tag. NFC East players who were franchise tagged last year, which doesn't belong and why? Dak Prescott, Brandon Scherff, Leonard Williams, which doesn't belong and why?
I would say Brandon Scherff, because I think the other two are big stars, and I think Brandon Scherff is a good player. And don't get me wrong, I'd want Brandon Scherff on my team. But in my opinion, those other two guys are top five players in Dak Prescott's case, top one player on his team. Leonard Williams at his peak is one of the best players at a very important position in the NFL. So I'd toss out Scherff.
Yeah, I'm going to say Dak because he's unique in his leverage, in his position. This is Kirk Cousins five levels higher. This is a guy who is playing the franchise tag game and winning. $37.6 million he will get in 2021 if he's tagged. And we were talking about this yesterday, Peter. I think it's incumbent on the Cowboys to get to him and work out a long-term deal, a four-year contract, before the deadline for applying the franchise tag, because they can't carry $37.6 million into 2021 under Dak Prescott's name. They've got to negotiate something with a cap number in the range of $20 million this year, if that much, in lieu of 37.6, and spread out the rest of the charge coming from a huge signing bonus in future years, are they going to have a hard time operating?
You know, Mike, you know how you always advocate for taking X percentage of the salary cap, telling a player, look, you play at 16% of the cap, whatever. In my opinion, this is the year I would do it with Dak Prescott, only I would do it very, very slightly different. I would say, and this would have to be worked out, obviously, because it can't exactly happen this way. But let's just say as your figure was 16%, right? So let's just say that the figure is 16% of the salary cap. You know what I would say to Dak? Okay, we're going to sign you to a five-year deal, and we will give you 16% of the salary cap every year. However, in year one, we want to buy back 4 percentage points, and we want to go to 12% of the cap in year one. Then in years 2 through 5, we'll give you 17% of the cap. So in other words, it'll all be equal, and you will end up making more money because of this, because the cap is going to increase a lot more with the new television deals. And the way that would help the Cowboys is, imagine if Dak is only 12% of the salary cap this year, just imagine, then his cap number is around 20. Okay, so all I'm saying is that you're right. It's incumbent on the Cowboys to get this deal done and to get it done imaginatively so that Dak Prescott would say, you know what? That's fair to me, and it's fair to the team.
At 180 this year, it would be a $21.6 million salary for Dak, a lot less, $16 million exactly less than what he would be due to make. But you're right, you make it up on the back end. The question, though, is how much of that is fully guaranteed? And can you fully guarantee cap percentages? I know you can make compensation contingent on cap percentage, but if I'm Dak, I'd worry about taking the $21.6 and, am I guaranteed for 20?
Of course, you'd have to have future guarantees.
Right. You'd almost have to guarantee all 4 years. And I don't know that the Jerry Jones would want to put that much money in escrow, which is one of the realities as to why teams don't have more than 2 years of fully guaranteed money. All right. Good thought, though. Good thought. That's the kind of creativity they're going to need to get this done. Otherwise, the Cowboys are going to be screwed going into 2021. Free agent receivers over the age of 30, A.J. Green, T. T.Y. Hilton, Marvin Jones, which doesn't belong and why?
I just don't want A.J. Green anymore. I'm not drawing any conclusions on anything other than what I have seen on the field over the last 3 years. And I have not seen enough to trust that A.J. Green is going to be any factor whatsoever in 2021. He might be. He's the kind of guy, if I were the Patriots, I would go and buy and buy with a lot of backside to the contract, or at least try to. What has he done, Mike, in the last 3 years or 4 years that would lead you to believe that he's still a franchise receiver? Nothing. And so I look at a guy like T.Y. Hilton, that he's going to give you whatever he has. You know, he's the Jarvis Landry of the Indianapolis Colts. And also Marvin Jones, I think he's one of these guys that when healthy, he is still can be five times a year, potentially, a game wrecker or a big game influencer. So those two guys I would want. A.J. Green, I would not.
It's amazing. His catch rate last year was 45%. Targeted 104 times, had 47 receptions for 523 yards in 16 games. He didn't play at all in 2019. Remember, he had that weird ankle injury when they practiced in Dayton as part of the NFL's 100th yeah. season, and he never played at all that year. He has 1,000-yard season since 2015. He started his career with five straight. He almost had 1,000 in 2016. He had 1,078 in 2017, fell off after that. And you think about it. He and Julio Jones came into the NFL the same year. Jones is still going strong. I agree with you on A.J. Green. He's still a guy who deserves a spot on an NFL roster. He's still a guy who can help you, but he's not the guy that he was. And the question for him is going to be, will he take whatever he can get to keep playing or say, I'm not interested in $3 million or, you know, especially this year with the cap crunch. What is an A.J. Green going to get offered? Far, far less than what he would have gotten a few years ago, Peter. It really is stunning to see how he's fallen. Maybe it's injury. Maybe it's something else, but he's just really fallen off dramatically. Free agent receivers under the age of 30, Juju Smith-Schuster, Corey Davis, Will Fuller, which doesn't belong and why?
Oh, that is a really good one. I guess, you know, the guy who I would say probably is Will Fuller. Undeniable talent. Really good guy to have on your team. Just missed a lot of time. And now coming off a suspension at the end of this year, I'd probably give it to Fuller. Now, Davis did not start strong in the league, but his last couple of years he's played well. And he's been productive. And Juju, I think he's a guy who any team in the league would want to have him on their team. He's got a great attitude. He plays hard. He's a team guy. I think Juju Smith-Schuster justifiably, wherever it's going to be, Vegas. I truly don't know where it's going to be. Wherever it's going to be, he's going to make money and be a good contributor to a winning team.
Please let it be the Browns. Please let it be the Browns. Please let it be. But please let it be the Browns. I agree with you on Will Fuller. Look, the guy's got a serious injury history, and then he gets healthy in 2020, and then he gets popped for using PEDs. What a shock. Now he's got to go back to not using PEDs. He's not going to be healthy again. I would not trust that Will Fuller is going to be able to be on the field for me on a regular basis because he's got that one. And look, they've all got an excuse. I used a supplement that I had no idea contained whatever the banned substance was. Under that standard, they never catch anyone who cheats. I don't believe any of them because they all say the same thing. I'm not, look, I understand the reasons for doing it. I'm not judging, but if they're going to have a rule in place that says you're going to get suspended, just admit it when you do it. Don't give us this cockamamie I got a spiked supplement thing. Although Will Fuller may have. I don't know. I heard he's going to sue somebody. They always say they're going to sue somebody over it. Let's see if he does. Last topic, free agent running backs. Kenyon Drake, James Conner, Aaron Jones, which doesn't belong and why?
James Conner. As much as I love James Conner, he's a very easy guy to love. He's one of the great team players in the NFL. I have no idea how many games he's going to suit up for me this year. He's just been hurt a lot. And I know his story. His story is an inspirational story, you know, coming back from cancer. But, you know, as far as getting a guy to be your horse in the backfield, if you sign James Conner, you almost have to, you have to have a coach and a coaching staff that is going to say, we are a two-headed monster. Okay, that is what you have to do if you are going to do that. You have to be like the Indianapolis Colts, you know, where you've got three backs. Marlon Mack, you know, was hurt this year. You know, Jonathan Taylor and Nyheim Hines. You know, they are not going to ever get left behind at the running back position because this is a team situation. And if you sign James Conner, you have to have another back in your stable who you are comfortable with and you're fine with if he's got to carry the load when Connor's out.
I'm going Aaron Jones for one very simple reason. He's the only one of the three whose Hall of Fame starting quarterback has come out and called him an MVP candidate. Now, that happened in 2019. Jones was kind of up and down, didn't have a lot of great performances in 2020, but had enough. But I think a real litmus test type of a player from the standpoint of, are the Packers committed to helping Aaron Rodgers? Will they put the people around him? Will they keep Aaron Rodgers? Or will they go back to the draft well and hope to bring in a young guy that is wet behind the ears that Aaron Rodgers is going to be dealing with for the next few years? So I think it's a real test what the Packers do with him as to whether or not the Packers are willing to make Aaron Rodgers happy, Peter. It's going to be hard to do. It's tough to justify a big investment at the running back position because there are so many guys every year who are coming out of college who can get it done for so much less than what you would pay to a running back. But, you know, Rodgers got to be looking at what happened last year. Derrick Henry got paid. He did well. Alvin Kamara got paid. He did well. Dalvin Cook got paid. He did well. Why can't we pay Aaron Jones and assume he'll do well?
The problem with that logic is, Mike, at least in my opinion, is that the road is littered with guys who you pay very well as running backs. And you go down the road a little bit, you know, the Le'Veon Bell road, let's just say. You go down the road a little bit and you say to yourself, what were we thinking? Yeah. And again, you can't see it at the time. You don't see it at the time. But there's a reason, and I'm going to be off with this a little bit, but there's a reason why you don't take running backs and then after they play great for 3 or 4 years, then you pay them a mint. There's a reason. Because, you know, Alvin Kamara, 67th pick in the draft. You know, Kareem Hunt, same year. And I forget his number, but it's around 78 or something like that. Alvin Kamara, great. Kareem Hunt wins a rushing title as a rookie. So the logical thing to say is, well, Kamara was early in the third round and Kareem Hunt was middle of the third round. Let's just take more running. Let's take Cam Akers 52nd. The Rams did that, you know, and he was great this year until he got hurt. And so all I'm saying is that you can find running backs. Don't get lulled into this thing where we have to pay a running back. And I think there are some people who are different. And surely, there's no question about it, you know, that Derrick Henry is different. But for the most part, Mike, I would not give running backs gigantic. I'd give them second contracts. I would not give them gigantic second contracts.
And when you think back over the past 20 years or so, I think what happened with the Seahawks and Sean Alexander, where they got backed into a corner to pay him big money after he was the league MVP in 2005, that was about the same time you started to see teams use 2 and 3 running backs. So you avoid a situation where you have all eggs in that one basket. The fans fall in love with him. He's scoring touchdowns. He's a great fantasy football player. Everybody knows who he is. You have this larger-than-life tailback on your team. You're just going to let him walk away and piss off, sorry, London and Manchester and Liverpool, your fan base? No, you got to keep him. It becomes political, and you avoid it if you have the revolving door at running back. So, look, the Packers can clip the last 5 minutes and show it to Aaron Rodgers as long as they take out the parts where I talked, and maybe they can get through to him and get him to agree to see it their way. Let's take
hey, I just know this, Mike. If I'm the Green Bay Packers, I'm just not paying the running back. I'm paying other people. Sorry.
Yeah. Especially in a year like this, where there isn't going to be as much money to go around as anyone thought there would be. When we return, Trevor Lawrence has had shoulder surgery. As expected, it was a success. More details next on PFF.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Do summer projects your way with Memorial Day savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can make the most of summer grilling and dig into gardening. Plus, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like power tools and storage to tackle any last-minute garage project. Summer your way with Memorial Day savings from The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select and stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
For all you kids out there who can't hit the broadside of a net with a football once or twice, or let's try it again, Trevor. Let's see, Trevor, for all you kids out there who have that kind of accuracy, there's hope. You can still become Trevor Lawrence, because that was Trevor Lawrence in 2015, missing every net he threw at, and now he is on track to become the number one overall pick in the draft. He had his shoulder surgery on Tuesday, the left shoulder, and it was a success, and he's already ahead of schedule, and unless he isn't, who knows, but he's still going to be the first overall pick. The only question in my mind, Peter, is it going to be the Jaguars who take him, or is somebody going to make the Jaguars an offer they can't refuse to go up and get Trevor Lawrence? And we were spitballing about this yesterday. Wouldn't it be something if David Tepper and the Carolina Panthers package the 8th overall pick and throw in a bunch more stuff to go up and get Trevor Lawrence and keep him in the Carolinas?
Yeah, I don't see how it's possible unless, you know, the only way this is possible is, let's just say that deep down, Trent Baalke and Urban Meyer and the Brain Trust get to a point, let's just say, a month from now, where they feel, you know, Mike, what happens now is, I was listening to a podcast with Todd McShay and Mel Kiper and Field Yates yesterday. It was really informative about the quarterback position. It was saying where everybody is right now. And Todd McShay has Justin Fields fourth in that group of the four guys, you know, of the top four guys. And so imagine if Urban Meyer as the draft begins to shake out, if there is legitimate thought that Justin Fields is going to drop maybe into the middle of the round. And again, we don't know. You don't know on February 17th what it's going to be like 2 months from now. You just simply don't know. But suppose you think that, and then Carolina's going to offer you 5 ones for the pick. And maybe throw in Bridgewater as your bridge guy. So maybe if you're Jacksonville, you consider that. But the only way you consider it is if you like one of the lesser quarterbacks 97% as much as you like Trevor Lawrence. Otherwise, do not overthink this. Just tell all the people who call, I can't hear you, and step up and take Trevor Lawrence.
But the other side of that argument is, and it depends upon how much you're offered. I made this case last year when the Dolphins seemed hell-bent on trying to get Joe Burrow from 5 to 1. And in hindsight, you know what the Bengals should have done? The Bengals should have taken the offer and drafted Justin Herbert at number 5. As much as I love Joe Burrow, the gap between the two isn't enough that I'd say, okay, I still get a franchise quarterback who, by the way, emerged from the season healthy. Not that it was Joe Burrow's fault, but I got all this other stuff too. You're giving up one guy in exchange for X number of guys and X number of lottery tickets.
Well, it's easy to say that now.
I know it is, but it proves the point. It proves the point. If you trade one lottery ticket that you think is a sure thing, you're not sure, you think it is, after all the surgery was a success, for a bunch of other lottery tickets, maybe you collectively win more on the other lottery tickets than you do on the one that you think is a sure thing. That's why I say you don't slam the phone down. You at least listen, because there may be an offer you can't refuse, and you need to be smart enough to not refuse it.
I think the one difference between this year and last year is that, and look, Mike, we don't know this right now because it's so early, but the impression that I get, very preliminary, spitballing, talking to a few people around the league, and you, I'm sure you get the same impression. Trevor Lawrence is here. The other three guys are here, here, and here in some order. That's the impression you get. Last year, you really got the impression that Burrow was here, but that the other two guys were close. And some teams might like Tua better than Burrow. Some teams might like Justin Herbert better than Tua, let's just say. But it's hard for me to imagine this year. You know, I would also just say, look at this, Mike. It's 2021 right now. Think about 2031 and think about where you will be as a franchise if you have the absolute total number one slam dunk best quarterback in this draft and you're 10 years down the road. Just think for a minute. If instead of having Justin Herbert, who is on some other team, Denver, Carolina, the Jets, if you took, let's say, Trey Lance, and now you've moved on from Trey Lance, because he was good, but he wasn't great. Or maybe one of them turns out to be Trubisky. I don't know. That's why at the quarterback position, you don't mess around. If you have the chance to take the great guy, the unquestioned guy, you can't find those guys. You got to take them.
But. And look, this is why the draft is such a complete and total crapshoot. Let's just go back 9 years. It was Andrew Luck as the top guy, Robert Griffin III not far behind. Tony Dungy argued at the time he'd have taken Griffin over Luck. They went 1 and 2. And those were the two, and everyone else was a project or a who knows or a Ryan Tannehill. Are you kidding me? He's a converted receiver. And now look at where we are. Luck retired. And you can never factor in when a guy's going to decide he just doesn't want to play anymore, but it happened. Luck's gone. RG3's a backup who currently doesn't have a team. Tannehill, holy crap, he's making more money over the first 4 years of his current contract than Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes. Russell Wilson, who? He went to 2 straight Super Bowls, and he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And then you got another guy who's a Super Bowl MVP. Isn't it amazing? The 2012 draft yielded a Super Bowl MVP, and it wasn't Andrew Luck, and it wasn't RG3, and it wasn't Russell Wilson. It was Nick freaking Foles. Back to my point, and all, Kirk, thanks, Pete. Kirk Cousins also was drafted that year, but which isn't something to gloss over, by the way. My point is, if you can take that one, and you can parlay it into, I don't know how many. Not that it worked for the Rams. That's the other side of it, too. And I think this is one of the reasons why the Rams are so gun-shy about using first-round picks now. Remember, Les Snead's quote to you, dominate with Washington's picks? They didn't. They got 3 ones and a 2 for the RG3 pick, and it blew up in their face. Just the whole thing, for all the money, all the time, all the obsession. And I guarantee you on draft night, Peter, on NFL Network and ESPN, every guy taken in round one, we're going to hear how great he is. And they're never going to say, you know, there's a chance this guy's really going to suck. But the reality is, half of them are really going to suck. It's all one big mess. We just don't know. And we may as well plant that flag now, folks, before you get all juiced up about the draft. We don't know, and we won't know until 10 years from now.
You know, here's the other interesting part of it, Mike, that always fascinates me. Like, this year especially versus other years, and that is the competition a guy has faced in college, factoring that into you know, what you're going to do in the draft. And so a lot of people, like Todd McShay on this podcast, he really likes Trey Lance. Now, here's the interesting thing. Trey Lance plays at whatever it's called, 1AA, I call it, because that's what it was called forever. You know, he played at 1AA where Carson Wentz played, but this year he played, what, two games? One or two games, all right? And then last year, you know, obviously he had a really good year. He didn't turn over the ball, didn't turn the ball over. It was a ridiculous year. But do you really have as much in him as you want to see? Or do you have to do with Trey Lance what Bill Walsh once did with Charles Haley? Now you were in short pants at this time, Mike, sort of. But remember when Bill Walsh took Charles Haley out of in the third round out of James Madison, whatever year it was, 85 maybe, I forget. But he took Charles Haley, and somebody said to him, "How can you take a guy who didn't have a great college career, who played at James Madison?" And, you know, why are you taking him? And he goes, because I've seen him do what great players in the NFL do. I've seen him do it a few times in college. And if I've seen him do it a few times, now it's our job to coach him to do it every time. And they ended up coaching him well enough so that he became a Hall of Famer. It's the same thing with Trey Lance. But now with Trey Lance, you don't even have a last season to really consider. You've got the level of comp thing and you have this. So that is what makes it, I'm just saying, Mike, that's one of the reasons why if I've got the first pick in the draft, I'm going, I can't hear you. I can't hear you. No, leave me alone. We're taking Trevor Lawrence. And so that's why I think this year is even more difficult to envision a trade for Lawrence.
Yeah, I still think you have to listen because, again, someone may make you an offer you can't refuse, and you have to be smart enough to not refuse it if it comes along. By the way, 1AA is now FCS, or as I call it, one vowel away from being a filthy word. Let's take a break on that note when we return our Wednesday draft. PFT Live, back after this. Happy 85th birthday, Jim Brown, one of the greatest of all time at any position, and really in his day, Peter. And this really was when I was in short pants or no pants. I was in diapers. I don't even think I was born when Jim Brown played the bulk of his career. I'd have to do some math there and some research. But this guy was the best, unstoppable, incredible, and walked away when he still had gas in the tank to become an actor. So happy birthday, Jim Brown, one of the best ever, led the NFL in rushing in 8 of his 9 seasons and retired as the all-time NFL's leading rusher. So we are doing a very simple GOAT draft. GOATs in a good way for a change, the best at their positions all time, any position you want to take, that's what we'll do. Peter, you've got the trivia question for me to determine the first pick.
I have the trivia question. Mike, we talked earlier about Russell Wilson being a third-round draft choice for the Seattle Seahawks in 2012, and obviously has gone on to an exemplary NFL career in his 9 years. So, I want you to tell me, in that draft, there was a punter drafted before Russell Wilson. Who was he?
Oh, gosh. I've known this for years. Brian Anger. There it is, Brian Anger.
Yeah. There was a pick made in anger by the Jacksonville Jaguars.
The Jacksonville Jaguars. You could have had Russell Wilson, and you took a punter. Whoever the GM was at the time gets fired again for that. You get fired every year that someone remembers that the Jaguars took a punter with Russell Wilson still on the board. All right, GOAT drafts. This can go a lot of different ways because there are a lot of GOATs at the various positions. I got to go because in my mind, it's got to be the separation, the clear, undisputed GOAT at their position. And for me, it's got to be Lawrence Taylor at the edge rusher, outside linebacker, defensive end, whatever position you want to call it. Best pass rusher of all time, Lawrence Taylor, final answer.
Yeah, I like that one a lot, Mike. I think you're absolutely right. I'm going to now go to the quarterback position, and I'm going to take Tom Brady. As I wrote in my column the other day, you know, Joe Montana and Terry Bradshaw had won 4 Super Bowls by the time they were 34 years old. Tom Brady has won 4 Super Bowls since he was 37. And so I think what we're seeing in Brady is not only greatness at the position, and you could argue that he's certainly not, in terms of talent, the greatest talent that ever played that position. Maybe he doesn't have the arm of Marino. He doesn't have the, you know, certainly he doesn't have the quickness or of almost anyone. But I just think the entire package, the leadership package, everything is there. And I'll take Brady at quarterback.
Quick note on Brady. MDS has argued in the past that you could separate Tom Brady's career at 2008 and he would get in the Hall of Fame twice, pre and post. And maybe by the time he's done in Tampa, you could have a third Tom Brady bust for what he does with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It really is amazing, the longevity and the achievement. And yes, greatest quarterback of all time, Tom Brady. Next one for me, I'll go Jerry Rice as the top receiver of all time. And it's strange. Every once in a while, Randy Moss pops off that he was better, and people sign on to that. Look, Randy Moss had the best skill set, the best God-given talent of any receiver, but he chose not to maximize it. He went to Oakland and disappeared. He quit on his team too many times. Jerry Rice was always driven, always motivated, always productive, always working, always trying, always effort, and that's why he's got all the records, and that's why they're not going to be broken, and that's why he's the GOAT at the position. He combined God-given ability with full and complete dedication and effort and maximized the ability he was given and exceeded it. So in my mind, he's the best receiver.
I'm going to take a very slight detour on this interesting little segment of our show, and I'm going to say, I would argue with you, and if you want to say that Jerry Rice is the greatest of all time, I'm not going to say you're absolutely wrong, but I am going to say that Don Hutson deserves to be in the discussion. Because when he retired from football in 1945, he had 3 times as many touchdowns for 3 times as many receiving yards with 3 times as many receptions, roughly, as the number 2 guy in the first 25 years of the NFL. And obviously, it wasn't a passing league then. But I will just add this. He held for 44 years the receiving touchdowns record in the NFL. Until Steve Largent broke it in 1989. So, I'm not going to argue with you, but I am going to say I don't think it's a slam dunk. I'm going to go to offensive tackle. And my offensive tackle would be Anthony Munoz. Now, truth in advertising here. I covered the Cincinnati Bengals in 1984. And one day I was walking by Jim McNally's office. He was the offensive line coach. And in those days, covering the NFL was a much different animal. I walked by Jim McNally's office 5 times a day when I was covering the Bengals. I walked by every position coach's office. It was a little dumpy building under a viaduct on the west side of Cincinnati. And he called me in. He said, Peter, come in here. I want you to look at this. And he started showing me some tape of the previous day's game that the Bengals played. And he just said, I've just done something that I've never done in my coaching career. I have given an offensive lineman a perfect grade. On every snap of this game, he excelled and never made one mistake the entire game. I've never seen it before. And I just look at that, and I look at the body of work in a decade plus career. I think Anthony Munoz, the best tackle there ever was.
Every time I hear Anthony Munoz's name, I remember when he was early in his career. John Madden had not quite appreciated or understood the nuances of the tilde, and he called him Munus repeatedly. Anthony Munoz played well enough that everyone pronounced his name right. Sims has that issue with the pina colada, by the way. He calls it the pina colada, but even when he's not here, I can't get him out of my head. Next, I'm going to go Barry Sanders, just because in my mind, Barry Sanders was the greatest running back of all time. He retired prematurely. He could have stayed longer, I know. He would have had all the records if he had. He's still fourth all-time now in rushing. But just the way he moved, the way he, you know, we've seen Tyreek Hill twist guys around downfield. I mean, that was Barry Sanders all the time. Once he busted through the line, it was a man among boys, even though he was smaller than most of the guys who were trying to tackle him, Peter.
To me, the ultimate man among boys is Jim Brown at that position because, you know, he's a 235 or whatever he was, 230-pound guy. And so many of the linebackers he was steamrolling were 230 pounds. You know, whereas today it's a little bit different. Devin White taking on, you know, the more diminutive backs. But that one I would really disagree. I would definitely take Jim Brown over Barry Sanders. As much as you're right, he is the greatest in terms of change of direction, make people miss player, not just running back, in NFL history.
All right, is that your last pick or you got one? Is Jim Brown your pick?
That's it. Oh, are we going another one? I thought we were going.
No, okay, no. I'm going to go your third round.
I'm sorry. I'm going to go to safety, and I'm going to pick Ronnie Lott. Because not only was he able to put the fear of God into guys, he was able also early in his career to be a good cover corner. I thought he was a safety for all seasons.
Apologies to Ray Guy and Adam Vinatieri. I was thinking of you guys, but sorry, your punters and kickers. But still, in my mind, they're the two best ever at those positions. Let's take a break. We'll wrap up this Wednesday edition of PFT Live right after this. The family of Vincent Jackson is encouraging donations to be made to his foundation that supports military families. JacksonInAction83.org. Vincent Jackson was found dead on Monday at the age of 38. Thank you to everyone who has reached out to express their condolences, said the foundation. While there's a hole in our hearts that can never be filled, we take solace in knowing that Vincent positively impacted so many lives. Peter, a tragedy, but the foundation trying to turn it into the best that they possibly can under the circumstances.
I remember for quite a few years, I was a voter for the Walter Payton Man of the Year, and Vincent Jackson was there several years in a row. What a guy, what a conscience, what a great example for the rest of the players.
All right, thanks for some of your time today, everybody. Enjoy your Wednesday. We'll see you back here again tomorrow.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.